Dan Smashville, good morning and thank you for joining us. It is Morning Drive, fourth and final hour, off and rolling here on this Monday. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Cale, Derek Mason, the Constable, Chase McCabe. Braden Gall had to dip out a little early. Kid's a little sick, so we'll go on without Braden. He'll be back tomorrow.
No citations will be issued. No citations.
Totally legit reason.
Legit, baby.
So the Constable will have to keep his badge and his whistle to himself. In the meantime, let's go around the National Football League.
Yes, let's do that. All right, I want to start things off with the Oakland Raiders. Owner Mark Davis did a 45-minute sit-down interview with reporter Paul Gutierrez, and he said, quote, 1-8 is my fault. Quote, I always look in the mirror and the buck stops with me, Davis said during the interview. This was in a restaurant, by the way, that he sat down and did this. Where this team is right now is my fault. We haven't been able to build a 22-man roster. We haven't been able to give this team a chance to win because the reconstruction failed. We failed from 2014 on to have a roster right now. Are you buying that or are you putting it all on Gruden?
No, well, you didn't fail from 2014 on. You failed this year by trading away all your best players.
Yeah, so if you want to, I guess what he's trying to do is he eventually you're going to have to justify the big contract. So he's trying to take the hit so he doesn't.
Which
so,
I respect that.
Yeah, but it's trying to, you're trying to, you know, cover your CYA. That's what he's doing. Yeah, CYA. And because if he says anything else, people are going to say, well, why did you pay Gruden all that money? So he's taking a hit so it doesn't look like a bad move. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, good for him, but still, Gruden got rid of, players that were critical to what they did 2 years ago.
Yeah, no doubt. They got rid of Khalil Mack. They've traded Amari Cooper. Bruce Irvin was gone. I mean, they've gotten rid of a handful of players, and it's almost like they're tanking and trying to lose on purpose because John Gruden, for some reason, has got such a big ego that he thinks that this roster needed to be gutted.
Okay, last night, Sunday Night Football, the Philadelphia Eagles, the defending Super Bowl champions, lost at home to the Dallas Cowboys, 27-20. Take that, Nick. And Carson Wentz, after the game, was, basically like, hey, we're still in this. Here's some audio.
We realized a lot of people are going to want to write us off at this point, and now it's just time to play ball and try and go shock some people.
He says, don't write us off. Are you writing off the Eagles after their start?
Yeah, they're done. I mean, their last seven games, so they're, 4-5? Five of their final seven games are against current division leaders. They needed that game against the Cowboy team that looked like they were dead after the Titans game. So I think the Eagles are done.
That division is so unpredictable, man. There's really no and I know Washington's doing well, but there's no dominant team in this division. So, no, they're not done. They could be in a position where 9-7, 10-6 wins the division, and they're right there still.
Now, on the other side, the Dallas Cowboys, as Nick just said, everybody was writing them off after their loss to the Titans. There were rumors, Jason Garrett's seat is as hot as it's ever been, and I believe it is. Of course, Jerry Jones said he's not going to make a move in season, but this was Jason Garrett after their win talking about playing through adversity.
One of the great challenges coming up here, playing a division rival, defending world champions at their place, is there's going to be some ebb and flow in the game. There's going to be some good things. You got to keep playing. There's going to be some adversity. You got to keep playing. I thought we did a really good job of that.
The Cowboys are now 4-5, trying to get back into the race for the NFC East. I mean, is he pretty much at the point where if they don't make the playoffs, he's getting fired?
I mean, I would have moved on from them by now, but you know what's going to happen? They've got, seven games left? They're going to finish 8-8, and they're going to have one of these seasons where it's like, okay, once again, right around 500, and Jerry Jones is going to have to make a decision that I think most people would move on from Jason Garrett, but I think Jerry Jones is going to be like, 8-8, yeah, we'll add some more players.
Well, if Amari Cooper continues to work out, if they finish somewhat strong, I don't think Jerry fires him. But here's the thing, because I don't know if this is in around the NFL, but word is Harbaugh and the Baltimore Ravens are set to split after the season. So if that does indeed happen, don't be surprised if he looks to Harbaugh to guide his team.
But which one?
John.
Which yeah. one? No, I'm serious. Which one? It would be a very Jerry Jones move to try and lure Jim from Michigan.
Yeah, both of them. Not saying one.
Jim Harbaugh would do that.
Exactly, but I think either one. But can he deal with, because the Harbaughs are, you know, they're A-type personalities.
Right.
So can Jerry deal with an A-type personality running his team?
This is my hope as a Cowboys fan and not as a sports radio host and journalist. If Jerry Jones wants to win another Super Bowl before he moves on, then he needs to get out of his own way, let Steven run the team, and go hire a head coach that can win. Either one of the Harbaughs would be a great hire, in my opinion, for the Dallas Cowboys. The talent is there. It's just finding the right person to use it and getting out of your own way as the owner.
I don't think he hires John Harbaugh, even though that would be the right move because Harbaugh's got Super Bowl pedigree. Like Derek said, type A personality. Jerry doesn't want that. You know who he's going to hire? And I saw the report yesterday. Mm-hmm. He's going to hire Lincoln Riley from Oklahoma.
Oh, man. That would be a not a good move.
No,
he needs somebody that's going to be an A-type personality for that team. But Jerry's not going to do it because Jerry wants to be in control of everything. And if the team starts winning, he wants to take credit for it.
You look yesterday, Baker Mayfield said that he woke up feeling dangerous, but they took care of business and won that game over the Atlanta Falcons. It was the first win under Greg Williams as the interim head coach. Do you think that the ship is being righted in Cleveland, or is it just Atlanta's really not that good?
I mean, Atlanta's depleted with players on defense. They lost a lot of guys, I think, in the back end of their secondary and at linebacker. But I'm just going to go on record right now. Not this season, but next season, Cleveland Browns will have a winning record.
Playoffs?
I don't know about the playoffs, but they will get to 9-7 next year. They're 3-6 right now.
Well, I think this will be a much better team next year. If they choose to part ways from Greg, again, I bring up the name Harbaugh, John, because I think, you know, with his resume, some team is going to give him an opportunity to be their head coach, whether it's Dallas, Cleveland, the Jets. You never know. He's going to find another job.
Yeah, so, Todd Bowles is getting fired.
Yeah, he's done after
that
the
team
season.
Is garbage.
Yeah, so.
Speaking of getting fired, this coming out not too long ago, the Bengals have fired defensive coordinator Terrell Austin after the Saints hung 51 on them yesterday. The Bengals started off as a team that people were looking at in the AFC North outside of the Ravens and the Steelers, but the wheels seem to be falling off. I would usually ask the question, is Marvin Lewis going to get fired? But this guy has found a way to keep his job for so long now, but
They're firing
the defensive coordinator.
They're firing everybody but Marvin Lewis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like they are permanently locked in lifelong contracts.
Did he sound like a life contract
with Lewis and Dalton? You know, if there was a game where I thought there would be a letdown, it would be the Saints yesterday. Mm-hmm. Big emotional win against the Rams at home. You give the Rams their first loss. You go to Cincinnati. I figured the Bengals would hang in, make that competitive.
I mean, you lose your star wide receiver that you just signed.
They got beat by 37 points.
Man, they put up a five-piece on them.
And they put up the X for Dez.
Yeah.
Nine times.
Man, goodness. But everybody gets fired except?
Marvin Lewis.
I swear he signed the contract in blood. He did something.
One more for you. The Rams coming off that loss to the Saints, their first loss of the year, they beat the Seahawks, albeit a very competitive game. I watched that one. Seattle was not going away at the end, but there are fears that they have lost Cooper Kupp for the year with a torn ACL. Concerns now that they're down their star receiver.
Yeah, I think that's a big loss, but they still have Brandon Cooks, they still have Robert Woods, and they still have arguably the best offensive player in the league, not at a quarterback position, in Todd Gurley. So maybe they score 30 a week instead of 40.
McVay is just too good. They keep it moving.
He was breaking up fights yesterday. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Did you see that, Derek?
No, I didn't see it.
He got in the middle of it, and it was great.
Oh, man, but he's just too good of an offensive mind. They keep it moving. He will be missed, you know, but next man up. Let's keep it going.
Mm-hmm. Real quickly, how about the Jets yesterday? You lose 41-10 at home in a game where the Bills started Matt Barkley, who I don't believe had started in a couple of seasons in the NFL. Literally picked up off the street.
Yeah, they just signed him.
He was on.
How many quarterbacks
the
have they gone through?
Hey, Barkley, what are you doing? It's Todd. Me, not Todd, but
Sean McDermott.
Yeah, this is McDermott. Who? McDermott, Buffalo Bills coach. Coach, what's going on? Can you be our quarterback this week? Sure. When do I need to be there? Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're going to start this week.
Yesterday.
Exactly.
Yeah. And to your point, too, about the quarterbacks, they've gone from Tyrod Taylor last year to A.J. McCarron, who then they gave it over to Josh Allen. He got hurt. Then they went to Nathan Peterman.
Mm-hmm.
Peterman's out. There's somebody else, and then there's Barkley.
Didn't they go to the quarterback? He was the quarterback for the
Derek Anderson.
Yeah, Derek Anderson. Yeah, yes, they went to Derek Anderson.
Is he even on the team now?
I think he got hurt.
Before you know it, the constable's going to be under center in a couple weeks.
Hey, yeah. Do you think somewhere in that building there's somebody in a back room going, "Hey, who traded Tyrod?"
Oh yeah,
mm-hmm. Or was it Tyrod?
Absolutely. Whoever that guy was, who decided to trade him?
Who did that?
They beat the Jets. I mean, if you're the Jets, mm-hmm. How do you not fire Todd Bowles? You're a defensive guy. You're lifeless on the sideline. Mm-hmm. You never show any emotion. I never see him coaching anybody up. Mm-hmm. And you're a defensive pedigree guy, and you let Matt Barkley drop 41 on you. He'd be out of a job this morning.
Everybody. You got to blame everybody for that one. Players, coaches. But I've always said, like, I know it's the coach's head coach. It's his job to be the CEO, and his job is to try to motivate his team each and every week to get going. You don't want your team to get too high. You don't want to get too low. Bill Belichick does an excellent job at it, and there are a lot of other coaches that do that as well. But you know, as a professional, man, I've never went out in the game and said, you know what, I'm just going to let you do whatever you want. As a professional, you should want to go out there and put your best foot forward, mm-hmm. if anything else.
Yep.
And the Jets are, they're just, not, as players, they're not doing it.
All right, big finish is coming up in about a half hour. Stick around for that. When we come back, we get back into the Tennessee Titans' dominating win yesterday. But did we finally see the breakout party for Matt LaFleur? That's next on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Great to have you in on this Monday. Nick and D-Mace, along with the constable. Braden had to step out. Kid's a little under the weather. He'll be back tomorrow. So big day yesterday, obviously. And look, Dean, I almost feel like we're almost disregarding what Dean mm-hmm. Pease and the defense did, because they are the number one defense. But if you hold Tom Brady and the Patriots to 10 points, that is a phenomenal day. But offensively, it has really come together, not just yesterday, Derek. It was 34 points yesterday. On Monday Night Football, it was a 28 spot against the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. They had plenty of yards against the Chargers, but not enough points. You said it would take 6 to 8 weeks minimum for this offense to click with LaFleur. Here we are, week 10, and maybe they're hitting their stride.
Yeah, because of the way the NFL has changed their rules in regards to the offseason, whereas, you know, players get more rest, but it takes individuals, it takes systems longer to really get going, especially when you've hired a new offensive coordinator and a new head coach. Yes, you are able to go to camp a little bit earlier. Yes, you're able to, you know, get some days here and there because you're a new coach. But those hours that you need, that you seriously need to put in to know the playbook, the repetitiveness you need to have to know the playbook, you just don't have it no more because of the way the rules are set up. So to me, whereas it probably in, you know, 10 years ago, it would have taken, you know, 3-4 games to really get clicking. It takes a little bit longer now, and we've seen it. Now, the Titans have had some good games, but it hadn't been consistent. The last three games have been consistent. They've been able to, you know, move the ball down the field. Everyone seems to be making plays now. Everything seems to be clicking. Now, they're not the best offense in the National Football League, not even close, but you can see them starting to trend upward now. Because I feel everybody, one, they're a little bit more healthier, but then everybody's starting to, you know, really get a grasp of what LaFleur wants to do as an offense.
Back-to-back games now, Corey Davis has been targeted 10 times. You factor in Marcus feeling better, his health improving, that nerve issue with the elbow and the gripping of the ball. You factor in Corey Davis. I mean, yesterday he snatched a ball out of the air with his hands. He just plucked it like he was the fifth overall pick should. You know, he beat Stephon Gilmore a couple of times. Are we now, based on all of that, are we on the verge of at least looking at a viable quarterback-receiver combo?
You hope so.
Not saying one of the best in the league, but just a viable rapport.
You just want to see the consistency out of these two. That a number two and number five overall pick should have.
Mm-hmm.
When you drive a quarterback and a receiver that high, you expect them to be a 1-2 punch for years to come. Well, you're starting to see a little bit, little glimpses of what they're able to do. The last two games, you know, they've hit on a couple of pass and catches that we didn't see early on. Corey seems to be a little bit more confident in what he's doing. Marcus is feeling more confident at just throwing the ball, letting it rip. And because that's what we talked about too. Marcus, he just has to, you know, plant his foot and throw it. Don't, you know, try to wait for it. Just plant your foot and throw it and trust that the guy's going to be there. Well, it seems like he's doing that now. And then LaFleur is doing a good job at, again, he's scheming guys open. I'm going to put you in a position to get open. I'm going to cut splits. I'm going to put you in a bunch. I'm going to try to flood the zone. I'm going to put you in a position where you're outflanking a cornerback. And each time, you know, it's worked. So, you know, they're going to get opportunities to catch the football. They just got to catch them, and that's what they've been doing the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, and speaking of Marcus, but don't look now, his quarterback rating is up to 90, and he's just a few points off of his career best year, which was his second year. All of a sudden, you start to look at some numbers, and I'm not a big numbers guy, but his completion percentage is 67%, best of his career. His quarterback rating is on the upswing. He's getting closer to his best season, which was 2016. Touchdown to interception ratio is now in the positive direction. He doesn't have more picks than turnovers. This could be a maybe, you said you're going to evaluate him at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
These next 7 weeks, he keeps playing like this, I think we have our answer.
Yeah, if he keeps trending outward and take care of the football and they continue to, you know, do the things necessary to keep their defense on the bench and allow these young guys to start gaining confidence. If they continue to do that, then yes, our question will be answered at the end of the season. But again, that's what we need to see moving forward. Can Marcus take three games and make it six? Can he take six and pull it, you know, take it into the playoffs and make it more? So, you know, yeah, three games is good, but, you know, we need to see three more.
The quarterback rating is 90. The completion percentage is 67%, but the swag meter yesterday was 100. Because when you rock a mustache like that, when you walk out of any, you as a public figure and you come out wearing a mustache like that, that to me tells me all I need to know. We're seeing confidence out of this guy, facial hair swagger. Derek Mason, did you ever have a vision of rocking a mustache when you were in the league?
The last time I rocked a mustache, I might have been in high school. I'm not a mustache type of guy. Just can't rock the mustache. You know, just the upper lip hair.
Full disclosure, I think it's a bad look for Marcus.
Yeah, it's a horrible look.
But he owns it.
Yeah.
I mean, if he keeps playing like this, you can keep owning bad looks.
If you own it, then it's yours. And you can rock it however you want to. But if you look a little bit, you know, you don't look as confident with it, you're trying to hide it, you know, trying to put your hand over your mouth, you know, or you don't want to talk, man, just rock it. He's rocking it. It's his. So it looks good on him. You know, it's a part of who Marcus is now.
Final takeaway from yesterday's game, too. And I think, you know, we've talked a lot about the offense today, but the job that we said that Dean Pease, for whatever reason, in his career, in his history against the Patriots, he seems to have more success as a defensive coordinator than any other defensive coordinator in the league. And I'm trying to think back to guys like Jim Johnson in Philadelphia, Dick LeBeau in Pittsburgh, some of the legendary defensive coordinators over the last 20, 25 years. What is it about Dean Pease that he finds a way to almost make Tom Brady seem human? For whatever reason, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Tom Brady, by and large, against Dean Pease, he just looks like a middle-of-the-road quarterback, like he is actually human.
Well, there's a blueprint to slowing time down. There's a blueprint to making him sort of mortal. And I think every quarterback has this type of kryptonite, so to speak. And the blueprint is, get pressure up the middle on time. If you get pressure up the middle and he can't follow through, or he has to step side to side to try to fight a guy, then you win. If you quickly take away short passes, because he uses those passes like run plays.
And there was a couple of times he threw off his back foot and kind of airmailed a few passes.
To get it out of there.
Was he a little rattled yesterday?
Like, he was frustrated.
Feeling pressure that might not have been there every single time?
No, I think Tom was frustrated. You can see, I think on one play, he was throwing it toward Hogan, and it was incomplete, and he did something with his hands toward Hogan, like come back to the ball or catch the ball or something. He was just frustrated that, guys couldn't get separation consistently. And then, defensive players was in his face. And Tom doesn't have he's not the nimblest person out there. He can't quickly move left and right and toss the football. So if you get pressure on Tom, the best place to get it is up in his face, and then I'll make him step side to side so then those rushers from the outside can get him.
Big Finish coming up in about 17 minutes here on Morning Drive. But when we come back, we'll get to a little college football. We talked about the Vols a little bit in the first hour. A big win at Neyland Stadium. We'll also touch on Bama and the rest of the SEC. That's next on Morning Drive right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Big Finish coming up at 9:45 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Cale, Derek Mason, Chase McCabe. Actually, the constable has stepped out now. Julian Council's in the house. We're just dropping bodies left and right here on Morning Drive. We're like the Patriots in the fourth quarter. We're just benching starters. We're giving everybody a rest. We're heading into the bye week. Braden's gone. Chase is gone. My Saturday partner's here, Julian Council.
What's up?
What's going on, man?
What's up? Not much, man. So enjoying this rainy Monday,
Julian kills the lights in the producer studio. You can't see a darn thing in there right now. It's unbelievable. Quickly, college football. Let me get your thoughts on a couple of things that transpired. We talked about the Vols in Kentucky, and we made the point in the first hour of the show that, look, Kentucky came out flat. They were deflated, losing to Georgia, no longer in competition to get to Atlanta, but that shouldn't take away from the Vols playing their best game, because the Vols played really, really well.
Yeah, they did. Garantano was efficient. He didn't throw the ball much, but he was efficient. Callaway made plays. The play at the end of the half, the big Hail Mary, was a huge play for the Vols. They ran the ball effectively, and on defense, they contained Benny Snell. They did what they needed to do to win a football game from a team, win a football game against a team that frankly wasn't ready to play. This is sometimes what you get when you're dealing with 19, 20 year olds, when they feel that, they don't have anything to play for, or it's like, we didn't lost our opportunity to go to the SEC championship. So, what are we playing for now? Just another regular bowl game. That's not good. Mm-hmm. And, they have to have something to play for a lot of times. And Kentucky, after that loss last week, I don't think they really had anything to play for. And it came and it showed against UT, because you can't convince me, had they beat Georgia, that they would have went into Neyland Stadium and played the way they did Saturday. I don't think that would have been the case.
Let's get to Vanderbilt a little bit, because we talked about this a bit off the air. Vandy yesterday, or Saturday, they go on the road to Missouri. They're a 17-point road underdog. They lose 33-28, but they were up 21-13 at halftime. And it is now a common theme for Vanderbilt where they have leads or they are up against teams that are, quote, better than them. They have them on the ropes, and they can't find ways to finish it. Now, that's coming off of a win at Arkansas 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. They had the bye. But at some point, and again, I'll say this, if you're not going to do it this year with Shurmur and Lipscomb and Pinckney and Vaughn, I mean, you've got multiple NFL players on this offense. Mm-hmm. At some point, you got to string a few together here. And for some reason, they don't do that under Derek Mason.
I'm just extremely disappointed in this team because this is two opportunities that they had to win football. Well, three. The ND game, Notre Dame game, okay, you came back and you made it a game and you just couldn't make plays at the, you know, you had opportunity to make a play. And Kalijah Lipscomb, who's been your most consistent receiver, you know, he couldn't haul the ball in. It was kind of like a freak play. He caught it and the guy just kneed the ball out of his hands at the last minute as he was falling down. So, okay, I give you that one. But when you play Florida, when you're leading Florida,
21-3.
Exactly, 21-3, and you allow Florida to come back and beat you by 10 points. When you basically have Kentucky on the ropes and you allow Kentucky, you know, to beat you, and then you play Missouri and you're up, you know, against Missouri, and you allow them to come back to beat you by a touchdown, by 6 points, rather, it's just disappointing. And, you know, this team, they got enough playmakers. They got enough guys that has been in this program that they should know how to close out games now. And I'm just extremely disappointed.
There's enough talent for this team absolutely. To be bowl eligible.
Absolutely.
You can't claim facilities when you lose fourth quarter games.
Absolutely. This is a team that should be clearly by now at 6 wins. Hands down, they should be at 6 wins right now.
And they're going to need to win the next two.
Not even worried about, you know, getting a 6 to be a bowl eligible team. Yeah. This team should be at 6 wins now.
Well, they got Ole Miss next week and then Tennessee in 2 weeks.
Exactly. You got to learn how to close out games. And as much as I go to bat for Derek Mason every week, all day, every day, but he has to figure out a way to get this team to close out games. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
You know, and like you said, that has nothing to do with facilities. You know, you just got to close him out somehow, some way.
Yeah, you can't cite lack of investment when you're winning 21-13 or mm-hmm. you have a lead in the fourth quarter or you're up 18 points. Well, you didn't lose because the facilities weren't good enough for the final 15 minutes of your game.
Exactly. And that's just something that I'm just disappointed in this team because I think they have the players. I think they have the right coach. He has to get his guys to play to finish out a game.
So some teams, some programs, they just find ways to consistently lose. It's almost like it's just been built into their DNA mm-hmm. to find ways to shoot themselves in the foot, and they do it. And I think the thing that's frustrating is in a sport where offense and there's touchdowns left and right, you've got a backup quarterback in the NFL in Kyle Shurmur.
Mm-hmm.
Pinckney at the tight end is probably, what, at least a second-round pick in the NFL draft?
At least. If he runs a good 40 time, he's a first-rounder.
Lipscomb is a Biletnikoff Award recipient or candidate.
Uh-huh.
And Keyshawn Vaughn's a stud running back. You need to win more than 4 games.
Yeah, you have to because just think, it took you 2 years to get Shurmur to where now he's one of the better quarterbacks in the SEC. Now he's leaving. You're going to have to start all over again. You're not taking advantage of the players that they have. Now, granted, the defense, I think, will be much better next year because these guys have been in the system for a while. But when you have you work so hard to find a quarterback because you know in today's football, you need a quarterback. So you work so hard to get this guy to be your quarterback, and you're not taking advantage of it. You know, mm-hmm. you're not finishing out games that you should win. Frankly, you're better than those teams. You're better than Missouri. I don't care what the score. You should have won that game. That was the game that if you finish it out, you win. You have 5 wins, and the only thing you need is one more game.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't care that you were a 17-point dog. You had that team down, and it was clear for the first 30 minutes of the game that Vanderbilt was by far, to me, the better team. And I watched a good portion of that game. Quickly, as we wrap up the segment, college football, one thing in the SEC, Alabama wins 24-0 over Mississippi State on Saturday. That's, I believe, the first time they've had back-to-back shutouts in the SEC. You look at that game, they played, I would say, their C-minus game and still won, still covered. They've got quarterback injuries now with Tua and Jalen Hurts. If you're Saban, and I know you got a quarterback take we'll get to tomorrow, you don't play either one of those guys next week against the Citadel. You rest them both. You start Mac Jones, your third-string quarterback, and you get ready for Auburn. There's no way you play either of those guys.
No, you can't, man. You got enough playmakers on offense and defense where you throw in a third stringer and, hey, run the football all day if you have to, because the Citadel is not going to stop you from running a football, and then your defense is going to shut them down. So it's going to be a third week in a row where a team doesn't score a touchdown.
Could be no score November.
Exactly. So, yeah, if I'm Saban, I'm looking to rest Tua. Don't play Jalen Hurts. Let the freshman come in, because he's a freshman, right?
Tua?
No. The third string.
Mac Jones?
Yeah.
I don't know if he's a freshman or a sophomore. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but when he got a chance to play, he did a good job. You know, so let him play. Got enough playmakers around him. Let him play.
Real quickly, too. And I don't know if Julian Council, if you saw this Saturday night, the LSU-Arkansas game. I think, Julian, you might know where I'm going to go with this. So LSU was up 7, fourth quarter, trying to salt away the game. They are a 12.5 to a 13.5 point favorite. Nick Brissett, the running back for LSU, breaks roughly like a 20 or 25-yard run. He pulls a Todd Gurley, and he slides down at like the 2 or the 3-yard line. Next play, again, Brissett could easily go into the end zone, get a 2-touchdown lead, and a cover for LSU. He goes down again. He pulls a Gurley times 2. And then finally, LSU comes back for a third play. And I don't know if Orgeron or LSU said, you got to punch this in. But he tried to get into the end zone, and he was stuffed. Now, the only logical thing that I can come up with is Ed Orgeron had LSU minus 12.5, and Nick Brissett was on Arkansas plus 12.5. Because I have never, and I have bet on football for a long time, and I've seen some bad beats and guys slide and not cover. I've never seen that before.
This is why you don't bet on football.
That was brutal.
But you know what happened? The young man saw Todd Gurley 2 weeks ago, and people raved about how Todd Gurley was smart and going down.
But he did it twice.
Yeah.
And that's what he said, though. After the game, he tweeted out, I'm a team player.
Yeah.
Team guy. Not going
to
score.
But then the third time, he tried to score, and Arkansas stuffed him.
That's because someone from one of the sports books got on the horn with the LSU coaching staff and said, hey, I need this kid to get in there and score. We're about to lose a ton of money.
I have never seen that in my life.
Saw it yesterday.
I saw you, indeed. All right, coming up next, it's time for the big finish here on Morning Drive. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. It is indeed time for the big finish. We do it each and every day at 9:45 here on the show. The big finish consists of the Morning Drive Daily Rewind, what we learned today, and on tap tonight. Without further ado, Julian Council, let's get to the Morning Drive Daily Rewind. And Smashville, good morning, and thank you for joining us. It is Morning Drive off and running on this glorious, glorious Monday. ESPN 102.5, The Game.
They have a hard time at beating Dean Pease. For some reason, I don't know what it is, but Dean Pease does an excellent job when playing New England at scheming up something on defense that makes Tom Brady uncomfortable in a pocket, where he has to move around more than what he wants to.
I'm just going to label it the Tennessee trifecta. You had the Titans, you had the Vols, you had the Preds. Clean sweep for the boys this weekend.
Does that just ignore some of the other football programs in the state
as well? Yes, it does.
So you should refer to it how Ricky and myself referred to it, the Tennessee three-step.
I like it.
Did you come up with that one in the fourth quarter there, or the first quarter at Neyland Stadium?
Halftime.
We could call it EBV, Everybody But Vandy.
Tennessee earned every ounce of that win. They dominated just like the Titans did. They looked like a totally different defensive front. They played really good football on that side of the football for two games in a row. Jerick Garantano was protected for the most part during the game. The offense looked great. They were able to create plays. Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt deserve credit for that win. They earned every ounce of that win. Great, great win. Two top 15 wins now for Jeremy Pruitt in 10 games. Great job, Tennessee. You can also then at the same time say Kentucky clearly was uninterested in getting off the bus to play that game. And it's not a knock on Tennessee. It's a knock on Mark Stoops in Kentucky, and Mark Stoops took the blame for it after the game. But both of those things can exist.
And this just dominated social media on Saturday. Chase McCabe, if he doesn't have a future in radio, he could certainly conduct a band.
Here I may not after this.
The Constable leading in Rocky Top.
Oh, Rocky Top, you'll always be on three hearts today. Yeah, oh, Rocky Top. Woo!
I didn't know. Now, there's video to that. That's the obviously the audio.
It just seems like Chase was conducting the whole thing, like the whole crowd.
I didn't know he had moves like that.
Deion, you did what you did in New England. They gave you an opportunity to go there and show your talent so then you can get paid by the Tennessee Titans. Here's twofold, okay? One, you did disrespect your former team because what you said was, oh, they chose to go cheap. Well, you don't. Just because they're not paying white, are you saying the more money, you know, you make, you automatically that makes you the better player? Is that what you're saying? Because I think white is a really good player, and eventually I do to white what they did to Deion Lewis. So in a sense, you are disrespecting the guys that you play for. Oh, you go cheap, you go with white. That's why you get your ass kicked. To me, you just, there's a line that you don't cross, dude. They gave you an opportunity to build up your stock so you then can get it. A contract from the Titans.
And when they put Brady down and the Patriots down, Patriots aren't used to playing from behind. Now, they can certainly do it. They've done it. We have seen it. But putting them from behind, you know, really hurt, really helped the defense as well. So each side helped out each other. But, you know, Brady's not mobile, which, you know, most of the quarterbacks we've seen them play this year are mobile. So when you take his receivers away and you take his run game away, there's not a lot left.
What a rush.
Ah, very
Animal
fitting.
Animal Hawk.
Animal Hawk, the Road Warrior.
Oh, I thought that was audio from Chase going to the bathroom.
I liked it.
I was like, how did we get audio of the bathroom?
How did we get audio Chase in the bathroom?
Oh, wow.
Was it a linebacker or was it a defensive end?
Definitely a defensive
People
end.
People just think when we get injured, we just go to the bathroom and Chase creates another player.
That was a defensive end because it sounded like that.
Another player. That was a nose
tackle. Kind of glad you brought the Vols up because we always talk about in college football a young head coach in his first year looking for that signature win. Jeremy Pruitt's signature win was against Auburn. Well, then we find out Auburn might not be that good. And you look at Vrabel, they got that win against the Philadelphia Eagles, defending Super Bowl champions. Well, now the Eagles are 4-5. They don't look like a viable playoff team. But you went in yesterday and you beat a team that won 6 games in a row. The flat out, they are the gold standard of professional sports. And they've been so for about 17 years now. And you beat them convincingly. I got to believe if you're talking about signature wins being applied to Saturdays, if there's a signature win on Sunday, Mike Vrabel got one yesterday.
Something about this show, man.
We know
about this show.
We were like the LaFleur offense. It took us a couple of weeks to get going because we went 0-9 in the first month of the
And
season.
Then I go to Knoxville and, you know, sing Rocky Top.
Yep. Man, we have that third eye, man.
All right, Chase McCabe, let's get it.
We just see things, man. We just see things that other stations and other shows don't see. We see them.
When I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, I started to realize I was old when...
You signed with the Texans?
Yeah, pretty much so.
wow.
Two things.
And that'll do it for the Morning Drive Daily Rewind. If you missed the first 3 hours and 45 minutes of the show, well, shame on you. We try to sum it up in about 4 or 5 minutes. Let's get to what we learned today.
Now, what we learned today.
So I learned today, I knew going into the weekend that Derek Mason was picking the Tennessee Titans to upset the New England Patriots. But what I learned today is that Derek Mason was not surprised by the decisive outcome of 24 points, a game in which you were a 7-point home underdog and you won going away 34-10. Derek Mason was not surprised.
Not one bit. But if had you asked me, or you know, said, "Hey, put down some greenbacks on it," I would have said, "Nah."
Some shekels.
Yeah, some shekels. I would have said, "Nah," but I wouldn't be surprised. What I learned today is that Chase, he can have a second career at being a band conductor.
Yeah,
he could be a damn good band conductor.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Chase isn't an embarrassment.
No, Chase, my guy.
Well, I got to tell you,
he could be a band conductor.
The wiggle of the hips. I mean, he's got he's more flimsy and fluid.
He got a little wiggle to him.
This was a video too.
He's right there in front of the band.
He was sauced up a little bit. Yeah, he was sauced up a little bit. Got him moving.
Sauced up, all right.
Yeah. You get a couple of cocktails in the constable, and all of a sudden you get some flexibility.
Oh yeah,
kind of like it. All right, Julian Council, let's get to On Tap tonight.
It's your guide for the happenings around town and what to watch from your couch. Here's what's on tap tonight, now on Morning Drive.
All right, I'm going to go with the Preds and the Ducks, a 9 o'clock puck drop pregame at 8 o'clock on ESPN 102.5 The Game. There is a Monday night football game tonight, Mr. Mason, although I don't know many human beings that will actually consume tonight's product, because the New York Giants are 1-7. The San Francisco 49ers are 2-7. Somebody actually has to win this game tonight, and it will be televised.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have to bear witness. The United States have to bear witness to, you know, two teams play, two teams that are dismal right now play. So it might just be a waste of a Monday night football game. But the Preds play tonight, so that, you know, that'll make everything good, you know.
Now, who's the quarterback for the Niners? Is it C.J. Mullins?
Nick Mullins.
Dan Mullins?
C.J. Becker?
Chris Mullins?
Is the other one?
I mean, good God.
Franklin native?
This is a guy coming off of a really good game last week.
Yeah.
He came out of nowhere.
He was like
the
Joe Montana. He was Montana-ish.
What, did he light up the Raiders last week?
Yeah.
Yep. Jesus. He was like Montana.
Thursday night football, Raiders.
They were like Montana to Rice.
Good God. Is there like a Mac game I can watch tonight?
It's always college hoops.
Yeah.
Tar Heels, Stanford, 6 o'clock, ESPN2. You're into that.
That'd be a good one.
That'll do it for a Monday edition of Morning Drive. Everybody stay tuned. Darren and Donick are coming up next. They'll continue taking your Titans reaction against the Patriots. And we'll reconvene tomorrow at 6 on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Bailey, DJ Nashville, have a great day, and I love you.